canceled it.
We just canceled it.
Mm. But it sounds like too much fun, especially this time of year. So
yeah, it's a good time. I'm going to jump across all kinds of stuff first. I'm going to start back a little more basic, because when I say Zwift, Husky, what is Zwift?
So Zwift is an online platform. Virtual riding. Anybody can jump on, ride with other riders. It is in a virtual setting, mm-hmm. world setting. Zwift specifically has multiple worlds. I think there's about 8 or 9 different worlds, various routes across those, and you can jump online, ride your bike, preferably on a smart trainer, but you could also use a dumb trainer as well, mm-hmm. i.e. something that doesn't have a power meter attached to it.
Yeah.
And anybody can ride any time of day or night. You'll always be somebody online to ride with.
Yeah, now. That's when Zwift first launched way back, it was one course and that was it.
Yeah,
one course. But what was crazy, because all the virtual riding, because Cyclops had their trainer bikes and you could ride different courses around the world, but it was just you.
Exactly.
Right, and then there was Trainer Road, which is some training, and then Zwift came out and you weren't just there. It's like the gaming environment. It was a server. And you might have 6,000 other people in that course that you're either getting passed by or passing.
Exactly. And in the early days of Zwift startup, they didn't have that many people online as well. So right. They did have some ghost riders, people
kind of ghosting in. Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't actual riders. They were just like computer-generated riders.
Yeah. And they try to facilitate drafting.
Yeah. Yeah, they tried to mimic that from mm-hmm. the very beginning. That was one of their goals, not just for the social aspect, but also to bring it into as much reality as possible.
Yeah.
And, of course, over the years of them developing it, the racing scene kind of developed on its own accord. Like, Zwift never had thought of racing as being part of their platform.
I remember when we organized riding together, before there were groups, before you could keep everyone together, it was... We'd meet at the start-finish line and kind of find each other, then try to ride with each other, and it immediately would turn into a race.
Yes.
And like, I remember the early days with Bike Club. We'd get, like, it was me and Corey White, Des Taylor, a bunch of other folks that we jumped on, and, man, it was a smash fest for, like, 30 minutes. And I think Zwift probably saw that and said, you know what? There should be some actual organized races.
Yeah, exactly.
Based on ability, mm-hmm. right? So it was A, B, C, and D level races.
Correct, yeah.
So you're not just racing against the fastest people on Zwift, you're racing against people with a similar ability level.
Exactly.
Now, when it comes to entering a race, I know when you jump on the Zwift platform, the events are there. You can just jump in a race as an individual.
Yep.
But what we're going to hear about today that I think is super cool is they have, you call them race seasons?
Yes, this is actual Zwift's racing league. It is something sponsored and organized by Zwift itself. Yeah. They started this at the beginning of the pandemic in response to the amount of individual third-party organized races.
Nice.
So they did some research. They kind of came up with a proper time frame. And on Tuesdays every year, they'll go through 3 seasons, 6 weeks per season. Mm. That, of course, they've changed it over the years. When they started, it was 8 weeks, and they're like, well, that was too much, so they backed it off to 6. And, but anyway, it's molded and shaped itself into something that's been very conducive to accommodate a variety of type of riders. So it's not just your sprinters that are winning. It's not just your time trialists that are winning. You can have an entire team aspect built around this, and it's created a
so fantastic. Is it a points per results kind of system? Like, first place gets 10 points, second place gets 2 points, and however your team scores creates a team score?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
So there's this previous season, we saw the introduction of what we would normally see on the road races called scratch races, right? So you get individual riders get their points based off of their finish position, right? Mm-hmm. All the way from first place down to last place. Everybody gets points.
Mm-hmm.
So that way everybody's working for something. It's not just, well, I'm not in the lead group anymore. I'm just going to soft pedal to the finish, right? Because ideally the whole point of the racing was to give people a platform to actually be competitive no matter where you're sitting in the field.
Okay.
Right? So that was the introduction from this season.
Yeah.
But we still see the Golden Child format as a points race where there are certain lines across each map or course, right? So you may have a sprint line at certain points. You may have a KOM line at certain points on the route. And the first 10 across those line would get points for that, right? Mm-hmm.
Per category?
Yes.
So the first A's, the first B's, the first C's, the first D's.
Well, it gets more technical than just that because there's divisions within within the categories as well, right?
Yeah.
But I'll keep it as simple as possible for us.
Sounds complicated.
Yeah. It gets really nitty gritty, and you can get pretty technical with how teams want to focus their strategies when it comes to these points races, right?
Well, and that's where, you know, but what it feels like, Rusty, you just jumped into Zwift racing. Mm. How many have you done so far now?
Two.
So how would you, first two questions is going to be, the first question is, how would you compare it to outside performance riding? And then the second is what is it like trying to race virtually with a system that kind of gives you some drafting and not, and how real world does that feel? So how is it different from outside riding?
Different from outside riding is more or less the consistent effort. Is really where it comes down to.
No coasting.
Exactly. No coasting.
That's my favorite part of a race.
So essentially, as far as a workout pace, I can do a 30-mile
As a sprinter, my entire strategy was based around how often can I coast. And that's why when I've done Zwift racing before, I'm like, oh, this is my weak spot. It's right in the center of my weak spot.
So within that ride, that's kind of what really leveled it for me, is realizing it's much more of a solid state effort for a longer time period than I'm used to outside.
Yeah.
Outside, I can drive for a moment. I can catch a breath for a second, whereas Zwift's more consistent, just all-out effort.
You just have to stay on it the whole time.
Exactly.
The whole time. Now, Husky, are the power-ups – so Zwift has these little power-ups. It can make you more aerodynamic. It can make you lighter. Mm-hmm. It can make the draft you're behind, and you use less energy to stay in it. Are those available during racing?
Only for the scratch races and points races. For the team time trials, there are no power-ups for that.
But for the other ones, they are.
Yes.
So as you're going through power-ups, there is that little bit of, you can't just be riding your bike. You got to pay attention to your power-ups because you might get that aero one, which I think would be key at the finish.
Not just finish, but if it's a points race, you could use that aero power-up for any sprint across the line.
Yeah. So that way when you get off the front, it doesn't create as much resistance as you're not in the draft.
Exactly.
Mm.
So, could you do something where, you know, you're behind someone, you're taking that draft, and if you're going to come around them, then activate it then and continue to power past, and you could win that lane.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like it.
There's a lot more strategy in play within those, and knowing exactly how
to use it. So they have a companion app. So there's you can actually on an iPad or an iPhone or Android.
My Android phone.
Run the app, and it connects with your smart trainer. But in addition to that, they have a companion app that allows you to activate the power ups and chat and some other things while you're pedaling your guts out.
Right.
So what does your setup look like, Husky, at home? When you're racing, you have a desk. You have is your girlfriend there punching buttons for you? Like, how's this work?
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Is she your director sportif?
No, my setup is a little more basic than what I would prefer at the moment. So I've got a personalized laptop that I've got sitting right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I've got the keyboard that's just hanging right off of my handlebars, so I could actually do like a puppy paws things while I'm trying to ride and do my typing and stuff.
Oh, wow.
It looks really awkward, but it gets the job done.
And do you run Discord on that as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, everything, including my streaming and everything, is run off of that laptop.
Nice. Rusty, how are you set up?
Mine so far, I've been working through my phone, actually.
Here's your phone?
Yeah.
We
I have a computer on my television.
I
just put it in my main room.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the whole surround sound thing with the computer.
You need to train your dogs to get you water and engage the different power ups. Have you seen the thing where the dogs have like the soundboard? Have you seen the soundboards for dogs?
No.
On like social media?
Yeah.
And they can like say certain words and they're like, no, no, hungry. It's not time to eat. No.
Oh, my dogs would have too much power with that. I didn't find that though. I love that, communicating with the dogs.
Yeah.
I can figure out what my weird dog is thinking, because who knows?
Who knows? Well, here at the shop, we have in our fit room, we have an Apple TV with the Zwift app on it.
Mm-hmm.
So then it makes it easy to have like a small table or something to have the iPad or the iPhone with the companion app open, so that you can. I like chatting because people, when you're riding regular Zwift, when you chat, the people near you can see it. I just like seeing people like messing with them. as I'm riding along. Right. Well, Husky, we just OKC Velo, our club, Bike Lab Club team, has a race team.
Yes.
And season two just got done.
That is correct.
And you streamed a lot of it. And I'm sorry that I didn't realize we wanted to do live commentary on some of that. We can do that again. We'll do it sometime. Actually, you and I, we can do a podcast, but we'll have the video be the video, and we'll just do some commentary over the Zwift race. Because I did that with Brent Wilson.
Oh, for his crit races.
For his crit race. So we'll do a Zwift one.
Yeah.
So we'll get there on that. But who are the top performers? Like, people jumped in. How'd the team do? What was your strategy? How'd you place? What happened with the Bike Lab team this season on Zwift racing?
Oh, fantastic. So I would say everybody on the team was a really good top performer.
Nice.
Of course, we had some people that would come out right out of the gates, absolutely smash it, and then they'd be done.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, we had a few that would come out of the gates, actually sit in, wait for their moment to shine, and then crush it to the line.
Nice.
Right?
So yeah.
That's the great thing about the Zwift racing is that you can play to your strengths.
Mm.
Even as a team, even though it's an individual points, all those points come together.
So how many points can you get in the first 5 minutes?
It depends on the race.
Okay, those are the races I need to be.
If they had a race that was all downhill, that would
play to my strength. I can sit in and win. Yeah, me and Hugh are your 5 to 10 minute men.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I pretty well got in the race like, all right, Husky, what do I need to do? Because otherwise I can't keep track. Him and Brian and all them can know exactly time.
And Husky's like, at around 7 minutes, we need you to ride as hard as you can.
Exactly. Just give me direction, where to be, how to ride.
Right.
That's
right.
All I need, some direction.
Yeah, I feel like our team could really benefit from having an actual DS instruction riding.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of talking about it and coordinating it and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. Somebody that can actually sit on the side that's not actually riding their bike and actually scroll through, privately watch everybody and be like, okay, you need to get ready for this 3-minute climb that's coming up, right? So ease it off, sit on their wheels. Or
this is like an HQ build out.
Yeah,
right. This is like the Pain Cave HQ.
Yeah. I've been watching until they canceled GCN Plus.
Husky's nodding his head like, fuck yeah.
That might actually be something I could do after I get.
You know what, Hugh? You'd be great at that.
Because I've been watching enough of this. I got all the strategy. Because I got to find every little thing that's going to help me. I'm a fat ass, so I can't say that anymore. But I'm just tall and heavy, so. But yeah, I love that sort of thing. I love watching the team strategy of road racing. It's great. I was curious. I was interested. You said they actually have team time trials.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And they run that using the kind of the rules that you'd expect from a team time trial, like first three finishers, the third one is the time it takes. And
basically, they've got slightly different rules because with the teams, you're only allowed 6 maximum riders per race, including the team time trial, and then they'll take the fourth rider across the line.
One.
Right. So you can only lose 2 riders
if that's
the strategy you want to go with.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting.
But if we want to go down through like a race by race.
Just go race by race, man. Let's get some highlights.
All right. So
since you memorized it all.
I'll do my best. So race one, we started off with a scratch race, which was the new format for this year that we've seen. And unfortunately, we only had, I believe, 4 or 5 riders, I think, joined us for that.
Nice job, Rusty.
No, Rusty was not in for that one.
I know, that's what I said. Right.
At this point, he's calling me out.
I'm calling him out.
But, okay, it had me, Amy, Brent showed up, and not Gary, but Brian?
Brian Lanier or Bumpus?
Neither of those. I cannot remember his name. I apologize. If you're listening to this and I forgot your name, I do apologize. But he was only able to join us for the first 2 races this season and had to leave for job something.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
But he showed up and he did fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Brent, unfortunately, was the last one to kind of mosey his way in. But
he's a sprinter.
Yeah.
And Brent was like, solid state effort, not my jam.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the course for us that race was 2 laps of London Loop, which takes us.
It's based off the world championship that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. See, but, I know things.
Yes. Yeah. But on this map, they also added in some of those hills just outside of London as
well. Oh, yeah. Right. So it was a hilly.
Exactly.
So poor this, Brent.
Yeah. And this was the reverse laps as well.
I don't like it already.
So it started out from the gates going down into the tube and then coming out into those hilly areas. And we had a 5 to 10 minute climb based on your power.
Ooh.
Yeah. Up Fox Hill. And anybody that's been on Zwift and knows what Fox Hill is, it's a brutal, almost 8% climb. Yeah.
Even in real world racing, if it was much more than a 3 or 4 minute climb, which is VO2,
yes,
right? If it got into actual threshold, I was not going to be there. I'd be chasing on after that point. But in Zwift, it feels like it's impossible to chase back on.
It almost can be.
In real world racing, there's enough ebb and flow.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. That apparently I got really good at chasing back on, but it was possible, you know, to do that. Whereas in Zwift, it just feels like the bus has left the station.
Yeah, and with the updates on their drafting from this past year, it's become even more difficult to try and chase back anything.
Oh wow! I would think they'd go the other way.
Well, they had before they switched to this new version, and it made things a lot easier for drafting, so people could sit in. One person be on the front doing like 4 watts a kilo, and people behind him would be doing like 2, 2.5.
Which is real racing. That's real world racing.
But that was
my entire racing career was based on that reality.
Yeah.
Like that was my point, being number two behind
World Champion. Yeah, I was
I don't want to be in the front.
I'm going to coast my way to victory.
Yeah. But in that tactics, it made it a lot easier for people to kind of like surge to the front and then come back, surge to the front and come back, right? So they're able to chase back breakaways a lot easier that way.
Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
So now that they've kind of mocked it up a little bit more so that people can't really slide to the front so easily, right?
Okay.
Like they have to actually power up to get past somebody that's sitting in the front.
So you like the change?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
But you're a steady state rider. Not really.
No,
you know, actually, at Wheeler Crit, you're more of a sprinter.
Yeah, I've
you
built
sprint
up my sprint
really, really well at the end of races.
Yeah, I've built up my sprint pretty well.
Yeah,
before I came to Crit races, I was doing a lot more mountain climbing type stuff, so I was able to do those long, steady state efforts.
Nice,
but it didn't really suit Crit racing. So,
race two.
Yes, so race two, we saw our first points race of the season, and that one was a crit style race.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely more suited to everybody here on the Bike Lab team, right? We saw Brian Lemire who showed up, Amy, of course, me. We had Rusty finally join us, and we had Gary Miller.
Nice.
Now Gary Miller's, if anybody knows, is not particularly a strong rider, but he's out there and. At least he has his name out there, and he enjoys some of the racing aspect of it, right?
So is he a C or a D level racer?
He's a C rider.
Okay.
You're right. And I don't want to say he's our lowest performing rider from the season, but...
He's in that C rank.
Yes.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, if I join, I'll fix that.
But we can't give him any...
aims to achieve greater lows than you've ever seen.
Now, Gary's done like 100-mile rides on Zwift. Out, I'm...
Hey, every year I do like a 180-mile ride on Zwift,
Gary,
I'll have you know.
No, the Gary is for...
Gary Miller.
Gary Miller.
Yeah, he just over 100-mile ride on Zwift. Like, I will give you
He was hurting after that Chickasaw ride that we did.
That's a
lot. But it was hot. It was really hot.
Actually, it just hit my brain. I remember Rusty talking about his first race. And how everybody took off like
it took off like a fire. Rocket.
Yes. So were you here's because I know
I got
how they
drop in the first three.
So
feet.
I know how they start. I've done a couple of races. So when he was telling me this, I'm thinking, oh no, he wasn't pedaling.
No, I was handling like a normal race.
He was not pedaling. He didn't have his power up. He was just sitting there.
I was pedaling some, but I wasn't anything.
Once it hits go, like whatever you're doing now becomes reality.
Yeah.
So he's sitting at 0 watts. Everyone else is at 600 watts.
Oh, no.
And they just
like,
go,
I was like, drop.
Go on.
I was like, all right. All right.
Well, that's definitely chalk one up on the board for things I should have known.
So in case you're listening and you want to do Zwift racing, as a race gets ready to start, you want to slowly ramp up for a probably, what would you say, a 2 to 3 minute VO2 effort?
No, I wouldn't say that much. It really depends on the course and what's going to happen in the race.
But at least 30 seconds of VO2.
Yes,
you got to be ready to like put some real power down to make sure you don't get dropped.
Yes.
From your category.
Exactly.
Now, do the races start everybody?
Yes. Well, you don't see other categories. So we don't see the A riders.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. So it does. It starts everybody that you're racing against.
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Well, how do we do in race two?
So on race two,
did we win?
We did our best performance out of race two.
What place did we get?
What was it? Fourth place.
Whoa!
As a team. Yeah.
It's a national podium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really, really good result.
Rusty's, and like the rest of the races, Rusty's not going to be here for most of the podcast.
Gotta go take care of the dog, man.
All right.
Oh, man. My dogs haven't eaten. They're going to be so mad at me.
But the one thing I do want to note out of race two was Gary Miller, who, because of the way this race was set up, we had a sprint segment in less than 500 meters from the start line.
Oh.
Which is why, as soon as the gate dropped, it was an all-out smash fest.
Yeah.
So everybody was legit sprinting right out of the gates.
Oh, wow.
And if it wasn't to get first place, it was to stay on the wheels of those that were sprinting.
Well, because, all of a sudden there'd be this giant separation if you don't do that.
Exactly, yes.
It sounds like the people at Zwift are, like, funny in an evil way.
Yes. Well, and here's the caveat, or not the caveat, the even funnier part, too, is they did it again in season two.
Oh, nice.
For the other points race. It wasn't the same course, but it was the same map.
So when let's put together races three and four.
Mm-hmm.
And what's some special call outs from those riders? And again, was there, like, it feels like, do you get a preview of where the sprint points are going to be?
Yes.
Or do you just ride and all of a sudden it pops up 500 meters, let's go?
Yes. So we already have the courses selected for this coming season three.
Gotcha. So you know if it's going to be 500 meters or not.
Exactly.
So are you guys then talking tactics about, okay, guys, like first 500 meters, we got to go all in. Or someone has to go all in.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's exactly what Gary, excuse me, it's exactly what Gary Miller did. Right out of the gate.
Yeah.
He said, I'm not going to be able to hold this group for the entire race, so what's he do? He pulled an absolute monster effort and just smashed it first across the line right out of the gate.
Wow.
Our C rider
took
first, not just first across the line, but he also took fastest across the line as well for that segment.
Wow.
Absolutely smashed
it. Sounds kind of like a prem and a criterium.
Yes.
Like, you know what? I'm going to win this race, but I am going to get me some socks.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, races three and four, some highlights.
Yeah. So race three was our first team time trial for the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of let's see what everybody can kind of do sort of thing. Oh, right? Yeah.
Because that's where you're really then having to work together.
Exactly.
You know? And you're seeing strengths and weaknesses. And like,
you almost have to practice that.
You absolutely have to. Yeah. Because we had.
In real life, they sure do.
Yeah. Again, because we had Rusty with us, who was, again, as we know, new to Zwift racing.
Yeah.
And practically new to Zwift as well. So
yeah.
The whole trying to sit on somebody's draft, understanding the delay between the trainer and the game. So
yeah, there's a lot of nuance in all the, I mean, lag is a big issue.
Exactly.
If you're trying to stay on a draft and knowing how that lag from technology to technology and also internet, I imagine creates all kinds of, like, it just takes time to learn.
Yes.
How to predict it and be ready for it.
Exactly. And that's really the biggest challenge when it comes to, excuse me, team time trials.
Yeah.
For us. So we saw a little bit of that. Can't say we did fantastic, but we absolutely did better than I was expecting for us to do.
Mm.
And a lot of the riders came out of it with a good sense of we did the best that we could, and that's all that we could really ask for. So
yeah.
I think we pulled in 8th or 9th place. No, it was 10th place. So it was like bottom of the bracket for the team time trial. But that's okay, because we didn't quite have that perfect synchronicity with all the riders.
Well, it just takes time. I mean, in the real world, it takes time, and in the real world, I don't think you have nearly the challenges. In virtual, there's more challenges.
Mm.
Part of it is
to coordinate that well, I think, because
because
everyone has a different internet connection. Everyone has a different trainer, potentially. Like, there's different little lag elements, whereas in the real world, you're just on the wheel, and you can either do it or you can't.
A lot of the physical feedback that we kind of take for granted on the actual road, like, you can feel when the wind changes, you can feel when something else happens, or when, you know, you're kind of coming out of someone's draft or something like that. And then, of course, the lag then adds on top of that your response factor to it. So it's definitely a lot different.
Exactly. And this is where having a DS for team time trials is absolutely
Huge Martin.
Yeah.
Zwift DS.
Because not only do they need to know the course, they need to know everybody's strengths and weaknesses and be able to call them through. Say, okay, your turn in 10 seconds.
Like,
get ready.
Study.
Exactly.
Sounds like work.
You'd be so good at it, Hugh.
Yeah, I'm an information processor. I told someone else this. I'm a human information processor.
Yeah. So it sounds perfect for you. You're going to be like the world champion of Zwift Director Sportifs. I can see it right now. Like 18 months from now, heavily recruited, sponsored. That's right.
So, you know,
Zwift
they
DS.
Have like the Zwift Racing League where some pro riders have actually come from.
Mm-hmm.
So what if they get DSs and...
Yeah, that's what I mean. You could be someday Tour de France and you're in some little-ass car running into riders trying to tell people what to do.
It's a Skoda. It's all right. It's a
Skoda. So how did we do in the season? Season two. How'd the team do?
So end of season two, we rolled in, I believe, eighth place in the entire league out of 12.
Out of 12.
So, yeah. So not up there, but definitely not at the bottom.
Right, either. Yeah.
So we did fairly well.
I was expecting there to be more teams. Is it divided by region or?
So the way Zwift.
Because it sounds like there's a lot of people on Zwift.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this last season saw them break the record for number of riders and teams registered. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure season three is going to be even more, considering now that we're going to be having three teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the way Zwift breaks up the leagues is teams register for a certain time zone or a zone in which they can race in.
Right. Because, you know, like globally, you couldn't just say everyone races at this time because it might be 3 a.m. in the morning for some people.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So that's part of the natural divide is the time zones.
Exactly. So they've got four major separations. They've got the APAC division or Oceania, right? So you got your Australian, Japanese, etc. riders, mm-hmm. right? And then you've got an EMEA breakdown. So they can, for that one, breaks down even further into like north, central, east, south, west, you know,
mm-hmm.
and there's that breakdown. Then you've got South American time zone, mm-hmm. and then you've got North American time zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much covers the entire span of the world.
Yeah.
So Bike Lab is focused on the Eastern time zone, since that starts at a decent time for majority of us here in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So teams will register into that specific time zone that they want to race for, and then each team is also selected into their category, right? So you want to race in the A category, or you want to race in the B, C, etc., right?
Mm-hmm.
And then before the season starts, the organizers will take all those teams and then see who's registered for those teams and then slot them into another subdivision that's based on the riders that are registered for that team, based on their Zwift profiles, what their abilities are. So we got slotted into Division 3.
Mm.
Versus, I think there was five divisions for the B division this year.
Hugh, here's what I'm thinking. There's a couple of options. I think we need to figure out what the remote screen sharing apps are that could work with iOS and Android. Or PC. See, that's what's crazy.
So I run Zwift off of PC.
Right. Is there one remote sharing IT app that works on PC, iOS, and Android? And can you multi-screen it, like a Zoom call?
You know, Zoom, you can do that. The ones I know of are paid and for business use. It's like Teams and Zoom, but...
Because I'm actually in Oklahoma because I was working at Life Church at first. And they put webcams in every one of their campuses. And then they had a headquarter area where the central team... Because Life Church is a multi-location church.
Mm.
And so at that point, they had like 14 locations, and they wanted to see how the local people were doing in their part of presenting and interacting with the people that were there. And then they had their central content happen during what they call the sermon. And so they had one screen that had multiple pictures, and they could see what was happening in all the campuses at once and then just select where to hear the audio from as they went.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, gosh, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something where we could screen share everybody into like a headquartered type TV situation, like have multicams. Like if we did it here at the Bike Lab,
right?
We could have four per TV, and that would be 12 people. And Hugh can be here, analyzing the information.
Yeah.
And then giving out directives.
Directive.
That'd be hard to do. It's hard enough just watching one race and six people.
Well, we could have a whole team here.
Then I have to take a nap.
We could all wear like headsets. It wouldn't matter because we're all in the same room. Mm-hmm. But we'd still wear headsets, like we were like talking to each other.
Yeah. Well, like if you ever watch a Formula One race, and they're all on that.
Uh huh. That's what I mean.
They've all got the headsets. They've all absolutely got the screens.
Well, see, here's the thing. Everybody should be on Discord for the team, right?
Uh huh.
So if they're on Discord, they could technically screen share through Discord.
Oh, that's true. They do
that
video.
That was a question I had.
Yes, they can do. You can do screen share through Discord video chat.
Mm hmm.
Discord solved the problem, DJ.
There we go.
DJ's here, guys. He was an early podcaster. Mr. Bond is here, his new bike.
No.
Oh, see, now I have to say Mr. Bond.
Mr. Bond. Old 007.
No, the caveat, though, is for some of us, such as myself, who do streaming of these events, too, I question how is that going to bog down the systems.
Oh, incredible.
Well, that's where, you know, we like the fiber. Team needs to maybe invest in some technology.
You know, if I get fiber at my house, then maybe I could.
Well, I'm not worried about my my data transfer. I'm worried about the processing speed of my computer.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. My computer is...
But if you had an iPad, computer. You could use 4 years Zwift. Hmm. And then the PC for everything else. Would that help?
Yes. I'm not sure how the...
I don't know. Like Zwift,
we can figure this out. We can figure this out. We can figure out this problem.
Yeah.
This is the only design problem. We can figure it out.
Possibly, because the way I use my streaming service is that I'm actually streaming the screen mm-hmm. that I am personally seeing.
But you mm-hmm. can Discord from the iPad.
But the Discord isn't connected to the TV or even the computer.
But you don't necessarily
have
to share
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If it sounds like a design problem, Hugh, we need to figure it out. I feel like we are just the... Out of the three of us, I have just the two guys that can figure this out. And I am not one of them.
Yeah.
But I love the intersection of technology and community. Like, my first career in the church was really asterisked with figuring out how to connect with people in digital environments and virtual environments and how community could happen there and did happen there. And there was a social benefit to that interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of Zwift racing, creating camaraderie and fitness and achievement and goals, I think it's incredible. And it's esports is still in its baby years.
Yeah.
Right. It's great that even USAC has picked it up. And
yeah.
They've sponsored.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Right? So that's where I just watched the movie on Netflix, Gran Turismo, about where they took the video game.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the people who are best at the video game got a chance to actually race.
Yeah.
In the real world in Europe, and how they turned out to be incredible. And now the guy that did that has 200 races under his belt.
Yeah.
I've seen at least two in bicycle racing.
But he started with like the mimic car video game mm-hmm. element for the video game.
Because I used to be really into that. And that's not, if you got a real simulator and you've got a wheel, because I've gone to Hallett with a real car, but then also done that kind of racing with games that put an emphasis on realism and simulation. And it really does transfer, and I've been able to use that when I would go to the track for real.
Yeah. So that's just seeing that, and then seeing pros come out of Zwift Academy.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's like there's a real connection there to that social environment, that virtual environment, and the ability to literally – let's step back for a second. The biggest limitation to seeing Americans at the Tour de France is that we're in America.
Right.
Right? Because Europe is small. Its culture is huge. The racing is vibrant. But to go up through the ranks here in America, you have to pay your way.
Yes.
You're paying for your coaches. There are no programs. Mm-hmm. You get recruited to a pro team. It might not be able to support you next year.
Well, and you really have to move over there from everything I've seen. Like everybody who gets into the pro ranks.
With Zwift racing, though, location's not an issue.
No longer.
You can race against the best in the world from your home, mm-hmm. right? And get noticed, get connected. It doesn't have to do with riding skill. Like, descending is not going to be something that you learn on Zwift.
Right. Exactly.
Right? And but sensing the moment, like, if you go from trying to do a team time trial with all the latency issues you have on Zwift to doing it in real life, it'll feel like you put it on easy mode.
Right.
Right.
Not physically, but, like, intellectually trying
to
make that connection.
That you've got. You've got the immediate response, no lag, and you've got all the other sensory information that you didn't have.
Have you guys watched the Amazon show Upload?
Yes.
Have you, Hugh?
No.
So they have the sensory suits?
Yes.
I can't wait to see you riding in a sensory suit in like 10 years.
God, oh, no. Please, no.
You can feel the wind.
I hope that's the wind I'm feeling.
Right. We wait until they have it just all in the helmet where they just basically stimulate those senses. But then, of course, you watch your kind of dystopic anime things on those ideas, and it's like they can kill you.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's funny enough,
everything
too.
Has upsides and downsides.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring that up a little bit, because I know it was a bit of a hush-hush type program, but I do know that Zwift had tested their product using Oculus Rifts, Oculus goggles and stuff.
Yeah.
But they quickly nixed the idea because people were literally falling off their bikes while trying to ride.
Funny story. There's a game on the Oculus called Gorilla Tag, where you're like a gorilla, and you use the hand things, and you try to tag people. And my son, Luther, got really, really good at it. Like, really good at it. And then he started to TikTok. And he actually started making money on TikTok.
Really?
From streaming elements of what he did in the Gorilla Tag game.
Crazy.
He doesn't do it now. But he did it for like a year and a half. He came to us and said, Dad, what's a W-9?
A W-9?
What's a W-9? I'm like, kid, you're 12 years old. Why are you asking me about what are you researching? Like, I expect a 12-year-old preteen boy to be researching very different things on the internet.
Right, yeah.
A W-9. He goes, well, because I almost have enough followers on TikTok to start making money off my streams and things I put on for Gorilla Tag. I'm like, I don't even say that sentence again. I could, like, can you split it up into three sentences?
This is what's wrong with the world today.
That's what's right. Right? Because what's wrong is that you never, you get disassociated from your location. There's a disassociation if you're only ever online.
And he only did that for a little bit. But like, there's some people who's like, they're followers. That's all they do. They're like, you know, influencers. And I'm just like, wow, I really couldn't care less about what you're doing online.
But they don't influence you, just the others, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
that's what their life is centered around.
Honestly, that's why I stepped out of the career I was in, because it was always online all the time at Life Church, and I didn't even know the name of the church down the street from me. I knew none of the staff in the area, but I knew people all across the world. And to me, I started feeling a little disoriented.
Yeah,
because I didn't have like a physical in person connection. And then that's where I believe that using the community and social and achievement kind of environments we have with online. Yeah. Partnered with real authentic relationship in real life is better than one or the other.
That's interesting, because I've been working from home for several years now, and it's the best thing that's been for my career. But it is interesting. It's different because you don't get to just like go to lunch with your coworkers anymore.
Right.
That
the camaraderie is a little different.
Yeah.
You need to like Zwift race with them.
Now they know what's. It's great.
What video game do all your coworkers play?
I don't really know.
Halo.
No, I mean, one's older than me. One's like so much younger than me. Then
it's not age, dude. I got gray in my beard. I'm still playing online games.
Well, yeah. I used to a lot, and my coworkers were older.
Did you?
I played first person shooters because I like that.
What was your favorite?
My brain.
Your favorite number one.
Halo.
Halo
or Modern Warfare.
Yeah. Did you play any video? Did you play some gaming, Husky?
Well, I got started off in a flight simulator scene.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I remember flight simulator.
Now that I'm getting to know you, that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
I loved flight simulator. Mm.
Yeah, but none of those first-person shooter stuff. That was too mainstream for me. I didn't want to go that route.
It was kind of a different thing. The reason why that appealed to me is because it became about reaction. So it's much like when I would go to the racetrack, and I wouldn't race cars, but I'd do high-speed touring, which is race speed. So you have to train your reactions so that I'm not thinking to do what I need to do at that moment. And it's the same thing with first-person shooters.
Well, we have, you know, I enjoyed playing some Halo. I was a youth pastor when Halo came out.
Yeah.
And I would do Halo nights at the church.
Mm.
And we would LAN it up.
I was going to say, you did LAN parties,
didn't
you?
Absolutely, LAN party, yeah.
We did that at my job.
And then when I moved out to California, and I was there for 2 years in an internship, all the staff at the church out there were on Xbox. And so I got an Xbox, and Gears of War came out. And I have never, like, that game was gory.
Yes.
The melee attack was a chainsaw on the gun that cut them in half.
Yeah.
Right? So you say that, and you're like, that's gruesome. But I was there with like other ministry dudes, and when I caught up on one of those guys and I cut them in half, I laughed so hard. I was like, ah, I got you! Yeah. It was so amazing. So I really, the multiplayer, I you know what? There's so many people who do it professionally now. If you just throw yourself into the open ranks of multiplayer video gaming, you're getting destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Best case is if you've ever tried to play Madden online, don't.
No.
You'll be so mad.
Like, even if you think you're at the best of your best.
Well, this is probably the reason why I don't play these first-person shooters anymore.
Just so mad.
I have to, like, work
so
a job.
I realized if I was going to play multiplayer games, I could only play against my friends
because
they were amateurs like me. And in those little moments where I could literally cut them in half online, I was like, yeah!
They tried to have ranked
or like
ones.
A sticky grenade as they ran away, like, got you!
And the ranked playrooms in Halo were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You'd be matched up with people in a similar ranking of you.
Yes.
And again, I like verbal exchange. So when you get a little kid with an older dude, and the little kid's way better than the older dude, and you hear them interacting, I'm like, kid's going to get you every time, man. You're done.
Yeah, right. No, that was the thing with Modern Warfare. You like, immediately respawn, immediately shot in the head by a 14-year-old.
Because everyone knows we're going to respawn. They're just sitting there like, you're done.
I was like, why am I here?
Yeah. Well, we got a little off the beaten path, but not really. Yeah. Like,
we're still on the
fitness, the fact that fitness and esports is getting into the virtual environment and can combine some of those things.
And think of where this started, because now that you mentioned like fitness and video games, I remember the dance games where you had the pad.
Yes, DDR.
Yeah, and that was the first, like, I have a freaking sweat.
Speaking of dancing, I have never seen anyone else love to dance to music than Mr. Husky Crow.
Oh, jeez.
We were at Cycle 66, and he's running the camera, and I have my Ultimate playlist playing. And I want to say at least 90% of the music, I'd look over, and he was, like, moving and grooving. He can't stop. The music moves him. It's my favorite thing ever. Because so many people, like, hear music and, like, meh, music. Yeah. Husky, he moves.
Oh, well, yeah. If you should see me in jazz band. These,
hold on. Oh, here we go.
I definitely need more
video. That's why this needs to be a video as well.
They have a theme song?
Yes. Yeah, the opening credit musics.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The menu.
It's been a minute.
DJ is so judgmental. Goodness gracious.
You know what I refuse
like,
to
yeah, there needs to be like a karaoke version of dancing.
It does.
There is.
What is it?
I don't know it, but I know if you go to Japan or some of those other Asian countries, like karaoke is.
Well, I know karaoke's huge, but in karaoke, you're singing a song.
Yeah.
But there needs to be like you dance like the music video.
They have that.
You don't have to sing it. You just dance it.
I've seen everything in Japan.
Okay, I see.
You know what I mean? Instead of the words, it's the dance.
Okay. I think Xbox probably did something when they first came out with like their, the S-Bar or something?
Yeah, and the Nintendo Wii did it as well, I think.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
You know, I still have that thing that tracks your motion and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't tell you.
So were you like a really, really good dancer on video games, Hugh?
Absolutely not. As long as you couldn't see my body, if I can get my feet moving,
which is a challenge, because you're not a small person.
But when there's no video, you can't see me.
That's true. That's true.
But I'd usually do those like in groups with people, like at a party or something. But then speaking of like how that's evolved, then go to Zwift where we take something that used to be only I'd do it in real life. I'd be on the road in real life. I'd be on mountain bikes. And then it's like, what's this kind of silliness? It's on a computer. But when you get into it and see how much detail that they've put into it, but then it's also learning. They're learning from what people are doing. Like you said, the racing evolved not from something they did. It's from what people were doing organically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so they're taking all that, much like how all the other video games where you sit and push buttons are, they're building that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to draw more and more people into it.
Yeah.
And it's going to add more features. And then when more sensory experiences become available,
I have said, and you wouldn't know this because you've heard me say it because it's in the shop here whenever. When Zwift first came out, and when they finally got to the point they started putting real world courses, like the London course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you write it on Zwift, it says you're in London.
Yes.
Not Zwift.
Yep.
I said right then that Zwift should do a challenge. because now when you watch the Tour de France, they, you can see the power and you know their GPS position. Mm-hmm. You know where they are. And they should do racing where you try to hang with the Tour de France.
Oh, God.
Oh. Every stage. You need, like, so some of us don't have to do every stage. You can just try stage 10.
Mm-hmm.
You jump in stage 10. And you see, based on fitness in the course, and on the screen, because they know the real-time location, they have that pack mm-hmm. and that breakaway. And even a little video overlay of the actual racing commentating.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like trying to virtually keep up, and they can do the GPS course, right?
Because
they already launched the Tour de France routes.
Yeah, they're
like a month mm-hmm. or two ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So they usually have 7 to 8 months to create the routes, right?
Right. But the challenge with Zwift is that they build their own virtual world. They may have an actual map, but they have to build the world virtually itself.
So that's where the problem is, like. Do we do all the topographical opportunities and options in France and then just select them, or do we have to build them as we go? But the idea that you could try, maybe they just try one or two.
And they have.
With a full course in real time while they're racing?
No.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You're racing in real time.
Yeah.
And when
they start,
when
they start.
When the attack happens, maybe there's like a 5 minute delay. So they can translate it, right?
Right, there'd have to be.
Right, and you don't see the opportunity to see what's happened, right? You're in the Zwift. I can watch TV, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't matter. You just try to jump in and say, okay, could I even finish in the time cut?
Yeah.
Could I even do the time cut?
Yeah.
Can I make it with the sprinter? Can I finish before Cavendish on a climbing stage on Zwift?
He's still lighter than I am.
He's not a good climber.
No, he's not.
Like, he's trying to make it just with a second to spare every time.
I'll tell you what, though.
But how cool would that be? Like, you jump on Zwift, all across the world, would have to be at the same time. That's where it's like...
That would be great for the 2 minutes that I could hang with the group. Now, and that would be the challenge, because a lot of people really wouldn't be able to. Like, you start from the very start, a bunch of us are going to get dropped pretty quickly.
But it's going to reorganize. You can reset and rally.
But I'm not going to catch up to them. However, if they have some way where you can kind of jump in... Like mile 37, I just happened to start watching. Oh, that looks like it'd be interesting. You can jump in then and see if you can hang for a few minutes. That would add more opportunities for you to to play.
I just think the fact that they have built the system that is based on actual geography.
Yeah.
And could they have an academy?
That's what I liked about Forza Motorsport.
And it's only the last 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
With Forza Motorsport, they did these intensive studies of the race tracks that they put in there. And so if you look at one, like I would watch Spa-Francorchamps and a Formula One race, and then I would go race that in a touring car on Forza Motorsport. I mean, they put so much into it. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, we have gone past our time, so we're going to stop here. But I really, really liked the conversation we had.
Yes. There's a lot of information out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there. If you're listening to the podcast, and you made it this far, and you're listening to the podcast... And you have any questions about racing on Zwift, just leave a comment or send us a message, and I will connect you with Husky, who has a lot of passion about helping people figure out how to get involved in that environment.
Absolutely.
And has a lot of information about it. He can help you navigate that whole process to jump in and get a part and be a part of things. I think it's only going to get better and more interesting as we go. And again, I think in 10 years, you're going to be in an upload-style sensory suit. In a team time trial.
Hopefully, just a helmet. That'd be all right. As long as I don't fall off my bike, that'd be all
right. Well, the closest thing we've got right now is a fan that connects to the game as well.
The Wahoo Headwind.
Yes, Wahoo Headwind.
The Wahoo Headwind can mimic the speed you're going, and it changes the speed of wind coming at you.
And on top of that, the Wahoo Climber as well, which can simulate
the angle of the road.
Yeah.
You get that going, and it's like, okay, well, here's the thing. I think they should leave steering alone.
Right.
Because there are steering options.
Yes, and Zwift just came out with their own controllers for steering.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. There's too much lag for now. When we all get fiber, maybe.
Maybe.
But right now, like, you would be turning right when they left you. Like, it's when you're in a race and you're trying to stay on a wheel, it's like split-second decisions.
Well, the way the turning works now is that you... Zwift has broken up the road into, say, 8, 9, or 10 different lanes on the road. You can't physically see them, But as
I didn't know that.
Right. You can't see those lanes.
So you can like switch a lane to find a better draft.
Exactly. So you're always following the same course that's predetermined by the game.
Because I keep thinking like line choice, like when you think about MotoGP and how you, like the Gran Turismo thing, like how you coordinate through the line choices. But I don't think Zwift could ever get there. But when in terms of the draft.
I'm not sure because I know with Forza, because that's the one that I used on Xbox platform a lot. It got a lot better, even with just normal lags of a few years ago, of you being able to race other cars. Now, they had to turn off collisions because there'd be overlaps when the lag would happen. But you could, as long as you had a clean line, a clean data line, do pretty well with feeling like you're interacting in real time with those other cars. So it could be that... that with just a little bit, maybe Zwift can do the same.
It'd be like the motorcycle games, but super low speed.
it's basically like that.
And that's what's interesting. Like when I think about that, I think about like Specialized built their own wind tunnel because there was all they were doing all their aerodynamic testing in wind tunnels for cars and airplanes, and they didn't go slow enough.
Right.
Yeah. And you turn it on, and you're like 60 miles an hour. And they like, we need to measure out 17 and 12 miles an hour. Yeah. And so they created, like, they hired some guys from MIT that are still there to build out their wind tunnel at Specialized so they could do low speed, high sensory aerodynamic development of all their products.
Yeah.
And so, like, getting into esports, it's getting into human powered response times and elements versus what we've done so far, which is like, you know, first person shooters and car racing and GTA 5 and everything else. So man, you're my favorite nerds in here. And DJ's a huge nerd, physically.
He needs to be on the podcast next time.
He will be.
Well, I'm also a huge nerd.
Stand up real quick. Who's taller? You were.
I think DJ's a little taller than me.
Yeah, I'd say DJ. Yeah.
By enough that it's different.
He actually hits 6.5 feet.
Wow.
I can only claim to be close to 6.
They grow them tall in Russia.
Duh.
Well, thank you both for being on the podcast today. We'll release this here soon.
And of course, shout out to Rusty, who was here for the first half.
And shout out to, you know what, kind of like the season.
Yep.
And I know he's going to listen to the whole thing to hear that burn, which I'm super excited about. But I appreciate you guys being here. And again, if you're listening and have any questions about esports in terms of cycling, let us know. If we don't know the answer, we can definitely find it out. And we will see you next time.
See ya.